as number two, it's open public comment. We have three people that have signed up. We only have two chairs, so we'll call two up at a time. You have 3 minutes. You know the rules, and Tammy has a magic plunger back there. And first would be Steve Matthews and Greg King. And then after that, we have one more, which is David Lynn. So, Mr. Matthews.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Commissioner. All you commissioners, director, and the new fisheries and wildlife director. I haven't met yet. We'd like a chance to talk to him and his staff about a very serious issue, which we all know about. It's the declining Chinook salmon situation. It recently came to light again. I mean, it's been going on forever with the orca issue. I've given you a 4-page written report, which in no way can cover the complexity of the issue. And I've given you an even longer and more windy, I don't know how long, a report that I did for Long Live the Kings about 20 years ago. And the simple answer, everyone knows it. We're killing too many small salmon. We're targeting hook and line fisheries, targeting immatures and hook and line fisheries, and we're sweeping bycatch under the rug. We're also selecting against rapid growth and age at maturity. Everyone knows about the shrinking salmon. We're just losing too much growth potential, given this has happened over 100 years. We've ignored it. I'm not saying we've totally ignored it. I mean, progress is made, but it's extremely difficult in this multi-jurisdictional environment. But fundamentally, we're losing a great deal of growth potential because the growth rate far exceeds the natural mortality rate over the life of these fish. Let me summarize. If we've been fishing better for the last, say, 100 years, we would have got 30% more fish in numbers in our catches and 50% more weight in those catches. Here's another way to put it. If you catch a 4-pound fish, salmon, kill it in a fishery, bycatch or directed, you've lost half its growth potential. Pick up the regs. You can go king salmon fishing, Chinook salmon fishing, for 365 days someplace in the straits, in the state. That's marine and freshwater accounting. Furthermore, you can go fishing directly on spawning salmon on their spawning beds. That policy is highly questionable. What are we doing when so many Chinook salmon are at risk? You can go up and catch them on their spawning beds using their eggs for bait. This fishing regime that Chinook salmon face is far more challenging. This breadth of fishing from 8 inches long to a spawning fish on its bed is far more challenging than for any other salmon species. All those other salmon species are doing pretty well. It's the Chinook salmon that are tanking. The department, of course, isn't blind to this. They've been making steps to improve things, but there's a whole lot more that can be done. I've given you several examples in that testimony, and I would, but much more needs to be done. Director, I'd be happy to meet with any of your staff. I know quite a few of these guys. They were students, and they're trying to do a really good job in a tough environment. But there's so many more things we can do to stop killing salmon too small.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Question.
Commissioner McKay.
I'd be happy to take any. It's pretty complex.
Dr. Matthews, thank you for submitting that stuff in writing. I did have a chance to take a look at that some 90-page report that predicted that this average size, back in the 97, you predicted the average size of Chinook and the average age of Chinook would decline through time. There's been a couple of decades, and we've seen that. I was going to ask about that, but instead I'll just ask a simple question. Your testimony, you said it's a problem that the department is allowing fishing on spawning beds or in spawning areas, and it was my understanding that we don't do that, that that's not allowed for sport fishing for spawning Chinook while they're spawning. I wondered if you could give maybe one example of that is currently going on.
It hits me right between the eyes. We don't know what excess spawning really means, but we've had, you know, for years people talk about their surplus, their excess, their above what we need, but no one knows what they mean and what that really means. And we got so many salmon in trouble. How does that look to the public if we're fishing so hard that we have to chase them up the creek and catch them on their own eggs? You can't really predict, and it's not known what the ultimate effects might be by that sort of thing. But my gosh, we need carcasses for fertilization. It just, you know, the issue gets complex, but I just can't believe that we're still allowing people to use salmon eggs and put them right in front of a spawning salmon and catch them. Maybe catch a couple of jacks and keep, or a couple of big ones, and then you can keep fishing for the jacks all day long, catch and release these wild salmon. It doesn't feel right, and the public would see that too.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. I got to leave quick to beat the snow to get back home.
Yes.
Ellensburg, I may come to Spokane if anyone wants to chat with me. And I hope Tammy, I can't remember your last name, I hope you might get a copy of that material that I've given to these guys to Mr. Storr too, and the new director there, and they can we'll chat with your staff at any time about these things. All everything I've said is clearly clearly debatable. Thank you.
Drive carefully. Greg, and right behind you would be David Lynn.
Good morning, Chair Parker, Director Suswin, Commissioner. I'm here today to talk about a little bit about harvest reform, which has been on an issue that we've been talking about for a few years now with this Columbia River policy and stuff. John North did a study on harvest reform, and you guys probably have seen it. And it shows that fishing guides do 25% of the trips at Buoy 10 and take 33% of the catch. That's been documented just at Buoy 10 fisheries. Washington has limited entries from Longview Bridge down. If you stacked all the charter boat licenses in Washington, it'd be between 124 and 119. I think there's five commercial or charter boat licenses were lost at Westport this year. But on the other flip side, we have 2,000 to 2,500 guides from Washington and Oregon. A Washington guide can go over and buy an Oregon license and fish Oregon waters and even fish out in the salt. They can run two and three trips a day. And out of that 33% that they take, how much are they taking in our other fisheries besides Buoy 10? I know logbooks were in the policy. It's not being enforced. When are these guys going to step up and start doing their part as sportsmen or as stewards of the fishery? When are we going to see some of them step up and say, like on the Kenai, they only fish 5 days a week? And the guides did that up there to themselves. They didn't do that with any regulations or anything set up. It's not fun fishing down there. Some of them be pretty rude, think that that's their fishery, that's their cash cow, whatever you want to call it. And I wish this commission, with your conversations with Oregon that you're going to be having over the next month or so, and you have had, that you discuss this with Oregon. And why are we limited entry and Oregon's not limited entry? Something has to give. I mean, even on the Callets where I fish, it gets terrible when there's fish in that Blue Creek area. It's a quarter mile, and there's guides in there, and things get pretty out of hand, and I don't even want to fish there. You know, they got to be regulated somehow. And if you guys could work with Oregon on that, I'd appreciate it. I think there's some Oregon sportsmen that would have the same issues too. It's just, you know, got guides that have worked a long time, and you can just go over there and buy a guide's license, and you're off and running. And the guys that have been around for a long time that have put their time in the salt and on the buoy tent, they seem to agree with my side of it. But anyway, if you could talk to Oregon about that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Any questions? Commissioner Kehoe.
Just a comment. Good morning, and thanks for your testimony. We have talked to Oregon about the guide issue, and I think we talked about it when the commissions met together, and we've had some discussions. Not a lot, but the recent discussions have focused on the Columbia River policy. But it's interesting to learn, it was interesting for me to learn, that the guides are not regulated by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. They're regulated by another entity. And so I do think, you know, ODF&W does have concerns about it. You know, the idea about limiting the having a limited entry or more regulation would have to come from another agency. So that was interesting. And there are some, I think, issues, too, as I recall, and I don't want to misspeak, but there are some challenges. I mean, the revenue generated from those guide licenses goes to this other agency that regulates them. And so I think what we were hearing is that there could be some pushback because of that. So I just want to assure you that we've had these discussions. I do think ODF&W acknowledges that there has been a dramatic increase in the amount of guide activity, more fish being taken by the guide. Exactly what you're saying. I think they're struggling though on how to address it. So, just want to let you know that, and other members of the
I appreciate your input.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Gale. We have Commissioner Graybill and then Commissioner McIsaac.
Yeah, and just to support what Commissioner Kehoe is saying, the Marine Board issues the licenses for the guides, and they have raised fees now to the point that it's really unfeasible for Washington guides to buy an Oregon license. 2 years ago, they raised it to $1,800. I've heard it's as high as $2,800 this year to buy a non-resident guide license. So they've pretty much shut out the Washington guides on the Oregon's license fee structure.
I didn't know it was that much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question about your testimony relative to the guide take at Buoy 10, and you mentioned the 5-day-a-week guide fishery restriction that's elsewhere. So I thought I heard you say you were referencing that when we start talking about the North of Falcon process for this year's thing, that you might be advocating that there be an option to consider that kind of thing in 2019, and I've heard that before also. But my question is just to be clear on whether or not you or the like-minded folks you're representing are interested in having that kind of an option discussed for 2019.
At North of Falcon?
Yeah.
Yes, of course, because we got some numbers 2 weeks ago from the Columbia River Advisory Group, and we're in dire straits again at Buoy 10, is Columbia River Fisheries. We went from, I think it was 65,000 summer kings to 35,000. That's half. Looks like fall Chinook's going to be in the tank again, too. Cohos are promising We were 50% above a 10-year average on jacks. So that's promising, but we still don't have steelhead numbers. We don't have sockeye numbers and, of course, coho numbers yet. But, yes, Commissioner McIsaac, I will be there at North Falcon.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Mr. Lynn, you're the last one.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, and Director Suswind. My name is David Lynn. I'm here from Ocean Shores and representing myself, but also express the feelings of many others in Grays Harbor County. At the last meeting on January 11th, Director Suswind reported that there were three wolf depredations in the OPT PAC territory on or about January 4th. Subsequently, there was a posting on the department's website with more details about the incident. From these details, it's clear that this occurred on public land, that all livestock were supposed to be off that land, there were no proactive deterrents in place, and these animals were owned by Diamond M Ranch. It was reported that because of 24 to 40 inches of snow and avalanche conditions, the frozen carcasses could not be removed. These animals were found on Forest Service land outside the prescribed grazing season, about 10 miles from where a search had been underway. They were found only because of a transmission from a collared wolf was received from that area. It's obvious that Diamond M lost these cows and calves, and that while the department is counting them as wolf depredations, they could just as easily have perished from poor weather conditions. The posting said that Director Suswind had previously paused the kill order for the two OPT wolves, but was now reassessing his options. There is no reasonable state of the world in which these depredations should be counted toward initiating wolf kills. I've been assured by someone who's more knowledgeable about this than I am not to worry about this, but nonetheless, in the report, it counts these three toward the 19 depredations that it indicates have occurred since September 4th. So I am concerned. The report also states that they were implicated in 16 depredations in under 2 months, and these bring it to 19 since September 4th. We should also note that Diamond M has implicated in 17 of the 22 wolf killings by the department. You may recall that I've addressed this topic on several occasions last year and continue to see incidents where depredations are unfairly counted toward the decision to invoke a kill order. At your meeting last September, I reported on depredations charged against the Togo Pack, in which a number of situations were questionable as to whether they should actually be charged as a wolf kill or not. A 1.5-week-old calf was killed. One cow fell down a ravine. One calf was miles from where it was supposed to be, and so on. At your December meeting, I reported on the depredation of a calf on the rendezvous site of the OPT PAC. It is well established that livestock should never be placed near a rendezvous site. It is the functional equivalent of baiting. I still maintain that the wolf-livestock interaction protocol is deeply flawed if it allows these depredations to be counted toward a kill order. There needs to be a distinction between depredations and chargeable depredations, and right now, the 19 OPT depredations tallied by the department are not all chargeable against wolves and should not be. Because the recent depredations occurred outside the grazing season, I have personally written to the U.S. Forest Service asking that they investigate this incident because Diamond M appears to be in violation of their grazing permit. I've asked that proper sanctions be instituted. And I asked the department to use its moral suasion and influence also to request the department or the Forest Service to open an investigation on this matter and take appropriate actions against Diamond M. Please remember your responsibilities to all citizens of the state, not just to commercial interests. We count too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Any questions or comments? Hearing none. Thank you. Thank you for the public coming forward with public comments. We appreciate it.